Hello and welcome to SwissInfo.ch's breathtaking programme for September the 21st. I'm Thomas Stevens. Why do some people take Viagra before climbing a mountain? Do Sherpas suffer from reverse altitude sickness when they go down to sea level? These and other high-level questions about acute mountain sickness will be revealed later, but first, an emotional return.
For me, after what happened in spring, it was really important to come back to Nepal, just to feel what's going on here.
Switzerland's Uli Steck is one of the most famous mountain climbers in the world. In 2008, he set a solo climbing record on the Eiger North Face by scuttling up it in an extraordinary 2 hours and 47 minutes. In 2012, he climbed Mount Everest for the first time, and did so without supplementary oxygen. However, in April, the 36-year-old from Canton Bern and two other climbers became the centre of international media attention when about 100 angry Sherpas assaulted them at 6,400 metres up Everest. Accounts are contradictory, but it appears that Steck's party was not aware of an agreement between Sherpas employed by guiding companies to have a no-climbing period when setting up fixed ropes. Steck's party was climbing solo and had overtaken the rope-fixing Sherpas. Steck vowed never to return to Everest, but he's now back in Nepal to tackle one of the most dangerous 8,000-metre peaks. He's hoping it's going to be third-time lucky on the Annapurna South Face. Swiss Info's Billy Beerling, who herself has climbed Everest, asked him why he was returning to the Himalayas.
I think for me, after what happened in spring, it was really important to come back to Nepal, just to feel what's going on here. Of course, I totally changed my mind about country, about how things working, and I think maybe it opened a little bit my eyes how the whole Nepal and everything is working out here, which is good. I sorted it out. For me, it's okay. Spring expedition is over. It's not my greatest story I ever had. It happened. It's done. We keep on moving forward. But of course, I learned a lot. And now it's Annapurna. It's an old project. I tried out it twice. But this, I think you have to accept, you know, if you really want to climb hard routes on 8,000 meter peaks, you have to invest a lot. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have a lucky punch and you just do it firsthand, but normally you have to come all back again until you get the good weather and everything has to be right. Mm-hmm. And this is really rare. You just have to have the patience and come back over and over again.
And do you feel that you're under outside pressure as well to come and do like this big project and climb an 8,000 meter peak, or is it really what you want to do from your heart?
I mean, Annapurna is something I want to do from my heart, and I always did that in my life. You know, a lot of sponsored climbers, they're working different, you know. A lot of time the trips get paid by the sponsors. Mm-hmm. So the sponsor is saying, yeah, oh, we make a trip to Everest or whatever. Mm. And so team members can apply or can enjoy this branded expedition. Mm. And I've never done that in my life. I would never do that. I'm just want to do my things. And if I find a sponsor to cover the cost, it's okay. If not, I pay my own. So it's completely a different way. And I always had this mm-hmm. freedom in my life. And I keep that.
Big wall climbing is what you do, but of course it's different at high altitude. What do you think are sort of the main challenges or difficulties for you on this wall?
There's a question how much gear you bring, you know. How difficult is the climbing? If you bring a lot of equipment, you're going to be really, really slow, which is not possible in alpine style. So you have to figure out how hard is the climbing, how much gear I bring, you know. As better a climber you are, as less gear you need. I mean, I can climb waterfall I6 without using protection. This is no problem. So this means we don't need to bring too many ice screws. This helps us not to carry too much, so we can be very efficient. But then if we have to climb, I don't know, a hard 8 pitch, if you don't have any pitons, you're not going to make it. You have to be really careful. And I think that's really, really important. How much food you bring. It's really hard. It's a lot of decisions you have to make that you can travel light as possible.
Okay, so hopefully third time lucky on Annapurna. And then that's one dream. And then what's your next dream?
You know, I was thinking a lot this summer, and especially now, also after this Everest experience, I'm gonna stay on technical mountains, on technical faces, but on the 8,000-meter peaks. That's what I'm interested in. But I'm gonna stay on the faces, so there's nobody bothering me.
Thank God there are enough faces still.
Oh, there's still lots of work to do on this 8,000-meter peaks. It's not done yet. So there's a lot of space to go climbing.
Uli Steck speaking to Billy Beerling. Shirty Sherpas are just one of many hazards up a mountain, along with avalanches, falling rocks and snapped ropes. Something else that can affect everyone, no matter their skill level, is altitude sickness, also known as acute mountain sickness, or AMS. Indeed, the last time Steck was on the south face of Annapurna in 2008, he had to abandon his climb in order to try to rescue Spanish climber Iñaki Ochoa de Olza, who later died of AMS at about 8,000 metres. Ochoa de Olza was no stranger to high altitudes. He had already climbed 10 8,000-metre peaks. Billy Beerling, currently in the Nepalese capital of Kathmandu, is writing an article about AMS research. I started off the interview, which was given some local colour at the beginning by a passing dog, by asking her about the importance of acclimatising.
If I go to Everest Base Camp, which is 5,350 metres in a day, or I take a helicopter there from Kathmandu, I will probably feel okay for the first 2 or 3 hours because my body hasn't quite noticed where I am, and then I'll feel really, really bad. And, you know, people die, you know, from that because they haven't acclimatized. And that's why we walk to Everest Base Camp in 10 days to give our body and our blood the chance to create red blood cells.
Is it possible to say how many people suffer from it, or is it purely everyone will suffer from it if they don't acclimate, if they try to rush up a mountain too quickly?
Absolutely. I mean, Reinhold Messner, you may have heard of him, the first person to have climbed all 8,000-meter peaks and the first person to have climbed Everest without supplemental oxygen. If you put him on the top of Everest, you know, within a day, he would die. We all need to acclimatize. Now, I made a big mistake this year. I walked to Everest Base Camp in 2 days because I thought, you know, I've done it so many times, my body can acclimatize. And it was okay for the first 2 days of base camp. And then I woke up one night and I had a gurgling in my lungs, which is the start of so-called pulmonary edema, which means your lungs fill with water. I mean, the only thing you can do is you have to go down. You know, that is your only choice. Sometimes, you know, when you're somewhere where you can't go down quickly enough, there is something that's called a gum-off bag, which, you know, it's like an inflatable chamber where people pump and then you get the pressure back to sea level.
And there's nothing you can do beforehand. You can't take a pill.
Well, no, there is now. Well, there is a pill called Diamox, or funnily enough, Viagra. People do take Viagra to acclimatize better. But now a very, very new trend is called a hypoxic chamber. So some people who go and climb high go out and buy themselves this tent, which costs about $10,000 or something, and they put it over their bed and they sleep inside this tent for 2 months before they go on expedition. And this tent basically pretends that you're at altitude. I mean, it doesn't go as high as Everest, but it goes as high as 6,000 meters. So they can then ascend in the mountains more quickly. Whether this is good or bad hasn't quite, you know, been proven yet. And for me, it's you have to acclimatize, of course, to the altitude, but you also have to acclimatize to the country, to the food, to the different environments. So there's much more to it than the actually physiological acclimatization.
Is it possible to say roughly what altitude acute mountain sickness starts affecting people?
I would say at about 3,500 meters. That's where your body. I mean, I suppose when you go up the Jungfrau, you know, in Switzerland, most people will notice. They will notice, you know, you may feel a little bit sort of lightheaded, a little bit dizzy,
a little bit
short of breath. I don't know whether you've ever been. I mean, you can notice it already. But, you know, when you go up high and you are intending to stay up high for long, you know, people who go up the Jungfrau, they go up and down, whatever. But you start acclimatizing or having to acclimatize at about 3,500 meters. So when you trek to Everest Base Camp, there is Namche Bazaar, which is 3,300 meters. It's the Sherpa capital. And people normally stay there for 2 nights. And then from then on, there is a rule of thumb, which is 300 meters a day.
Do any Sherpas get acute mountain sickness? Or have they really been there all their lives, I suppose? They've acclimatized completely.
No, Sherpas do get high. They get AMS, acute mountain sickness. And it is a problem because, of course, the Sherpas acclimatize a lot better than we do. A lot of them come from the Khumbu or the Everest region, which, you know, lies between 3,500 and about 4,500 meters. So, of course, they are used to it. But they're going to Everest. They're going up to 7,000, 8,000 meters. And I have seen Sherpas who were very, very altitude sick. Now, I actually know Sherpas have died of altitude sickness. So they have a better condition to acclimatize, but they still have to acclimatize slowly. A Sherpa cannot run up to 6,000 meters in a day. Well, he probably can, but he'll probably feel pretty sick. So they have to acclimatize as well. They do it more quickly. They do it better. And some of them don't. Some of them don't acclimatize, and then they get into trouble.
Does it work the other way around? So if it's someone who's spent all their lives up halfway up a mountain, like, for example, Sherpas, there isn't such a thing as acute sea level sickness or anything like that for them?
There is nothing like that, but I had a friend of mine, a Sherpa, who came to the UK with me, and we went to the beach for the first time, and he went into the water, and he had no idea that the water would be salty. And there was actually, it was amazing to see this guy, you know, this big Sherpa, you know, he's climbed Everest I don't know how many times, and he was just standing there, sort of licking his skin, thinking, oh my God, this is salty, this is amazing.
Is there a long-term impact on people's health who spend a lot of time up a mountain? I guess this is what a lot of the research is looking into at the moment.
Yeah, and you do say, you know, being at altitude is not very good for your brain. That's why, for example, climbing Everest without supplemental oxygen, which so far only 200 out of about 5,000 people have achieved, is very bad for your brain because your brain cells die up there because they don't, your brain doesn't get enough oxygen. For example, Reinhold Messner is still a very intelligent man, and I can't see any, you know, effect on his brain. But there are another few climbers I know, and they've climbed all 14,000 meter peaks without oxygen, and you sometimes wonder. So it's certainly not very good for your brain, but that's without getting high altitude sickness. Yeah, I mean, that is just being up there. Now, if you've had pulmonary edema or cerebral edema once, you are more likely to get it again. Your lungs can be scarred. You can have, you know, problems with your lungs in the long run. But yeah, I think at the end of the day, high altitude climbing without oxygen, it's a great experience, but it's very bad for your brain.
But you're right. You sound fairly coherent at the moment.
Yeah, but I do wonder because I do spend about 4 months a year above 5,000 meters, maybe 5 months. I mean, there was 1 year, I think it was 6 or 7 months. And yeah, I mean, when I climbed Everest, I used oxygen. But of course, you know, I got up to 7,300 without oxygen. And I sometimes wonder, you know, I get quite forgetful, but I suppose it's just old age, right? So I think it's just what happens. But I always have this great excuse. I can always say, oh, no, no, I've done a lot of high altitude climbing. That's why I'm forgetful.
Billy Beerling. Thanks for listening. Read other Swiss news and views at swissinfo.ch. I'm Thomas Stevens.